What are you going to do so you will be the one catching the attention? And why are you as a supplier worthy of getting that time from the customer? First of all, it's really important to know what's important for the different customers. And you can't do that if you don't know your customers and the customer data and the customer profile. Be prepared to make mistakes because you haven't done this before and there will be mistakes along the way.
Welcome to CVM Stories, the podcast on customer value management. Together, we explore how companies can be more successful and the customers happier through the use of latest customer value management techniques. Learn key commercial and analytical insights from telecoms, retail, finance, and other industries that drive CVM forward.
Welcome to CVM Stories. I'm your host, Egidius. Today, we will be talking with Sana Emtinger, the head of customer value management and marketing technology at Telia Norway. Sana will be sharing her experience on building a customer 360 profile, deploying a new marketing automation stack, and redefining the art of one-to-one communication. Join us to explore Sana's insights.
CVM Stories is produced by Exacaster. We help companies take their customer value management to the next level. To stay updated on our latest episodes, subscribe to the podcast or sign up for an email newsletter at exacaster.com/CVM Stories.
So, Sana, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Sana, for people who don't know you, could you give a brief introduction of what do you currently do? What is your role?
Yeah, I'm head of CVM and MarTech in Telia Norway. So in that role, I'm leading a team of great marketeers, I would say. I guess we are working within the CVM and customer value management, but it's part of the marketing area. So they are great marketeers. And what we do, I guess, it sounds quite easy because we are working on providing the best one-to-one communication to all our customers. But as probably lots of you that are listening, you know, it's not that simple. So my team is working both on creating the best data structure, where to find the customers, figure out what's relevant for them, working in quite complex systems, yeah, and everything that comes along. And obviously, in the end, it's always about the tone of voice and the communication as well, because I guess that's what the customer finally sees when they see our communication. So it's a bit complex area, but I guess that's what makes it fun as well.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned many different aspects of your work, and CVM is that cross-functional work, you know. So what inspires you the most when being in this role, you know?
Well, when I first started in this role some years ago now, I had been working within the marketing department, and I've been the marketing manager and head of marketing for many years. And I think that in this area, when you are sort of looking closely to the CVM and one-to-one communication, it is a bit similar throughout all marketing communication. And what you see is that if you're looking at yourself as a customer, and I just scrolled Facebook the other day just to see how many messages I was actually presented to in 1 minute. And I received 40 messages from different suppliers in only 1 minute. And that's only what you meet when you are on Facebook. Then you have all these suppliers trying to catch your attention on emails and SMSs, on different clothing and branding and outdoor commercial and TV commercial. So it's all about what you say, when you say it, and where you say it. And what we see is that customers are expecting quite a lot from you as a supplier, because then you have quite a lot of knowledge about the customers, and they expect you to know them as well. So from my point of view, if you are looking at the CVM area and what inspires me is maybe the complexity within this. What are you going to do so you will be the one catching the attention? And what is sort of, why are you as a supplier worthy of getting that time from the customer? So to be able to do that, you need to be really smart and relevant to the customer. You need to know what's important to them, when it's important, where they would like to have the communication. And maybe if you succeed with that, you will see a high click rate on your email. So I think what's inspired me, obviously, also I have a fabulous team, so it's good to work with them as well. But I guess it's the complexity. And when you succeed with all the different points adding up to this, that's what's inspiring me.
Okay. This is a very inspiring answer, you know. I have never heard this version of the story, you know.
Yeah, but it all adds up to this. I think it's the complexity that makes it easy, and it's so many trying to catch the attention. And if you are not good enough on what you do in the CVM, you will not reach your goals either, mm-hmm. which makes it interesting.
Which sounds very challenging, you know, straight to the point.
Definitely.
you need to be very, very good to achieve your goals, yeah?
Yeah.
When we first met, kind of the first thing that you told me was that one of your most important projects was to rebuild a customer profile in Telia. So could you elaborate on this a bit more? Why do you think this was your most important project? And could you tell us more about it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's really important to know what's important for the different customers. And you can't do that if you don't know your customers and the customer data and the customer profile, because that's when you can start to map different customer groups and can figure out how they act and what's important to them. So to be able to catch the attention, we need to have to know more about our customers. So I guess that's why it's important, because a lot of the things when we are starting to work on the communication, it always starts with the data and the customer profile. So that's more or less the beginning in many cases to the customer communication. And if you don't have that in place, it's hard to get started.
And I have a tough question for you, Sana.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, what is the customer definition in telco, you know? Because it's subscription. Is it, I don't know, is it the MSISDN? Is it a national ID? Is it a household, you know, or what?
Yeah, that is a tough question. And I don't think I will give you a clear answer on that either. But if you look at it, maybe I should try to explain it in a little different way, or at least how we see it, because I think it's more or less everything that you mentioned there, but you need to start with one sort of identification part, and that could be different things, but you need to decide upon how to identify your customer. But then obviously you need to have all the data points, if you say, if it's household data or subscriber data or if it's connected to a product. But if you have the first identification, then you could use the different data as well, and you could also work with it in combinations. So I wouldn't say it's maybe just one. It's a really tough question.
It reminds me, you know, a movie which we watched together with my daughter, you know, where Kung Fu Panda, when it kind of understood its identity, it said, I am everything, you know, I am a child, I am kind of a panda, I am a dragon, you know.
Yeah.
So it's basically everything.
Yeah, it is.
And which identity would you start if you would do it all over again, you know?
Well, I can explain a bit on how we did it. So, but we have to go back a few years, actually, to start to look at where we standed when we started on this. And in Telia Norway, we have bought quite a lot of different companies. And in 2018... we bought Get, which was a TV and broadband supplier. And at that point, that was the biggest customer base that we had bought throughout the years. So we started in a way, you know, we had, maybe we could say, the luxury of getting this. We just needed to get the customer in the same customer base, because both the TV and broadband customer base were a huge base, and also the mobile base were a huge base. And we needed to look at one person and say, do you have both TV, broadband, and mobile? And also, this was just one of the mergers that Telia had done and one of the acquisitions that they had made. So when we started to look at the Get database and the Get structure, we also needed to look at all the other companies that we had bought. And when we looked at it and started to analyze it, we more and more realized that it was a mess all over, because there were so many identifications, there were so many different ways in looking at the customer, and the description of the different touch points and data points were different as well. So we more or less just couldn't continue as we had. We needed to do something to build a new structure. So what we did, we have been looking at all data points, one to one to one to one. And what we quickly realized is that this is something that will take time. It's not done overnight. But the first thing we needed to do was obviously to find a new structure on identification of the product, or not the product, but the customer. So we saw that this customer is both a mobile customer and a TV customer, or maybe a broadband customer and a mobile customer. And then when we sort of had the basic identification of the structure for the customers, we started to add new data points. And when we added new data points, companies today have the luxury of having quite a lot of data. It's just a way of how do you actually use the data. And that's decisions that you need to make. And I think you need to stick to the decisions that you make as well. And we decided that when we had the basic, we continue to add data points into different systems, for example, the CVM and one-to-one communication systems, use case by use case. So that's what we did when we looked at the different data points.
Mm-hmm. And Sana, I assume you had quite a challenge because you have multiple companies merging, yes?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I assume that you needed to run CVM initiatives. You probably couldn't say, hey guys, now wait for a year or two. we will figure out what's the customer. and then let's talk, you know. So how did you convince the company that you actually need to do this huge transformation and kind of understanding what is your real customer? Because it's like, it's a huge, tremendous effort, you know. What was your pitch there?
Well, it is a huge project. And we actually looked at two things at the same time when we started to discuss this. First, it was that we had this mess in our data foundation that we had, and we needed to have some clarification on that. But this was actually at the same time when we also saw that customers were demanding a bit more. They expected more and more, and we needed to continue to get like the, at that point, the opening rate high. Now we can't really look at opening rates in the same way anymore, but click rate and everything. And to do that, we need to be able to work with personalization. So we need to be personalized, relevant to the customer. And with so many customers that we have, we also need to be able to do this automated and at a scale. And when we wanted to do that, we saw also that we were having a quite high cost as well, since we were running two different CVM systems. And we were running different databases. So to merge everything, we would both be better and more precise in our communication. And we will also only work with fewer systems. And that's obviously a bit good on the cost side as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, everyone was on board. So we started these two projects. One was to look at the data structure and data foundation. And one project we called personalization at scale, which looked more at the CVM tools and the way of working with the communication.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, you were lucky with the business case part, because making one system instead of two was a good business case to run this even as a technical project, yeah? And then you got a second layer, which is like personalization, which is increment, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. you were in the lucky spot.
It was good timing.
okay. And when you started building the profile, yes? So I assume that at the end of the day, when you finish the project, you know, you have thousands of data points about every customer, yes? Now, when you start from, I don't know, 10 data points, 50 data points. How do you choose which data points are most important, you know, to start with?
Yeah, that's when we decided to work with this method use case by use case. I guess you could decide how do we decide the different use cases.
Yes.
And that obviously falls a bit back to what the company has as their strategy. What do we need to succeed with? And it could be either, you know, MPS driven and to build journeys to create more loyal and happy customers. It could also be journeys to create a higher revenue. So it all starts out with what do we want to achieve and how do we do that in the best way? And then we have like a use case. So let me take one example, maybe to build loyalty. In our case, we have these three main products. It's TV, broadband, and mobile. And if you look at the broadband, we have seen that there were quite a lot of customers struggling with their Wi-Fi connection at home. And to do that, we started then to see what kind of data points do we have for customers that struggle with their internet connection at home, with their Wi-Fi. And we then look at the different data and see, is it the typical age on the customer? Is it typical devices that they have at home, and so on. And when we have done that analysis around that task, we sort of have a hypothesis, or we have an answer of what we should do. And then we also have quite a lot of different data points. So we said these are the data points that we need in the communication to succeed with the result. And then we take these data points and look, do we already have them, since we have done some merges already? So it could be that we already have it. Or is it that we need to take it from our core systems and add it into the different data platforms so it ends up in the customer communication? And looking at this case, we found out that the customers were usually putting their devices on frequencies at home that were not the best way for them to get the best internet or Wi-Fi connection. So just to tell them that this is how you could do it. If you look at your devices and change the frequency, you will get a better internet experience at home. So that's sort of how we do with use case to use case. And we are adding data points and data points. And it takes obviously some time if we don't have the data point available already. But when you have come to a quite big load of data that you have already, there are fewer and fewer data points that we need to add now. So now it's starting to be quite quick to drive different use cases. But in the beginning, there were some processes to add the data point in the right way.
Mm-hmm. I have two commands here and I don't even know with which one to start, you know. One, it's like when you say how you did it, Sana, it looks so easy, you know. It's like the easiest project in the world, you know. Everything well structured, yeah. Etc. But the question is, did you have any kind of, I don't know, struggles before you came to that? Because it's kind of when you start building, you know, adding these 20 data points, and you know, but we are missing those 5 data points. Let's add them, you know. It's like let's add them quicker, etc. So did you go through that process, or was it like so smooth and easy, as you say?
No, I mean, we have met quite a lot of barriers along the way. Definitely. But I think maybe one of the hardest part was actually to get started, to decide upon how are we going to do this. We started out in a different structure where we looked at the ABTs and different data tables and said, okay, let's add that data table for a whole. But then we ended up also having lots of data points that we didn't use. So we needed to rewind that and start looking at it in a different way. So that was one example that we had sort of a blocker, and we have had that. And I guess that's since we haven't done this before, we talk to people and try to figure out what's the best way. But then in the end, it's up to what's working in your organization. And sometimes you just need to take a curve and go back a few steps and start over. Mm-hmm. So we have done that as well. But when we had get going and we had found sort of our style at least and how to do it, it works quite well for us now.
Okay. And then one side question. It's you mentioned yeah. a really interesting use case, meaning like a customer experience of how the broadband connection is at home, meaning like my Wi-Fi connection settings, they actually impact my experience. And have you seen the drop in the churn rates because of that experience improvement?
We haven't looked at exactly that point connected to churn. We have looked at this point and more to mm-hmm. if customers are mm-hmm. are getting the better experience, and hopefully in the end they will stay longer for us. But we haven't analyzed it in that way yet. Mm. But that's the hypothesis of what we want in the end.
Okay. The thing why I'm asking this, because I just read a paper where it was kind of claimed that the biggest impact of churn are two things for the broadband. It's either bad experience or the bill shock, you know. So it's I just was wondering, can we get an outside data point, you know, to validate that.
Yeah, and definitely it's something that we will look into as well. And And I guess both you and me know that if internet isn't working at home, it gets a bit annoying.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you're not very happy.
It's crisis at home.
So, within this project, what would you say was your major challenge when you were building the profile?
Well, I guess the challenge and the luxury as well is that, and I think it's the same for quite a lot of companies, we are having so much data points, and that's probably the toughest part as well. Because as you say, you need to decide where do you start, what's important, what should you look at. So the amount of data points and actually know how to use it. And also we needed to go back to the root in all data points to be able to actually know exactly what that data point was showing us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of data. It's like, you know, big data is also
big
tough.
Now,
many of the projects like these, you know, you gather all customer data, etc. And now you need to figure out a way how the company adopts that data, you know. Could you share some learnings from that side? How did you encourage the adoption of this customer data in your organization?
Yeah, I think for sort of my area, when you look at the customer communication, it's quite easy to relate to it and see how it's supposed to be used. But the team working on this project on the data and the data foundation, they also did a great job around the complete company to, as you say, get the knowledge out there of how we could use it. So they have had cross-organizational training, talking about the data, how you could use it, what the data mean. And then they have also had these individual stop-in sessions. It's like, I'm just wondering about this, so just stop in. So they have had open session where anyone in the company could come and ask, am I looking at the right thing? Am I using this report in the correct way? How should I use it? So I think that's been really popular as well. And I also need to mention, obviously, since we are talking about data, and data is also, it's a huge important in many senses, but it's also important that you work within the correct GDPR way. And there are different levels, obviously, what you could use of data within the organization as well. So I think that's also important to mention. But otherwise, they have also had round trips to different departments, trying to help them and figure out what they can do with the data. And there are plenty of use cases that are outside of customer communication as well. You could work with it when you look at offerings, for example, or if we are looking at, is it a specific product that we should focus on, and so on. So it's also in maybe product development and also when you look at how happy customers are, what should we focus on, and such. So it's quite a lot. And then the final thing that they actually had was also to have SQL courses for people that were extra interested. They set up SQL courses. So the people that wanted to set up their own reports or look deeper into some data points were able to do that. And I think that's been also quite good for the company, since we have increased knowledge on how to work with SQL within the complete company in this during this project as well.
Wow, this part is really, really interesting. I would like to see how does it work, but it sounds like a really good way to go forward, like just giving tools and knowledge how to dig into data. Did you try to write SQL as well?
Yeah, I did. And I've been looking at lots of YouTube videos as well when the just stop in session wasn't available.
Mm-hmm. And kind of what was your impression, you know, because you come from marketing and you try this kind of writing a simple code, essentially. So what was your experience?
Well, my impression is that SQL and SQL coding is not for everyone. But for those that are interesting and looking into, from my point of view, it was a huge barrier in the beginning to actually get into it and look at it. And it takes some time until you figure out how it works. But then for me and for lots of other people, I have seen that just suddenly you just figure out how it works. And then it's much easier. But I'm still no expert in it. I'm still on the learning curve here.
But can you tell now for your team members, so I need this data point, could you just write me a SQL?
Yeah, well, in my team, we have increased the knowledge quite a lot on sequence throughout this project. And there are lots of people that really loves it and other things it's a bit more hard.
Very good to hear. I really appreciate people who try to write code and write SQL, etc. I am an old SQL lover, you know.
So for you, it's really easy then.
Well, now yes. In the beginning, yeah. You know, we all needed to learn. So, and I know, Sana, that at the same time when you were building the customer profile, you also were running another large project, which is kind of reshaping or taking new tools for marketing automation. Could you tell us a bit more, why did you decide to run two projects at once? Two large projects at once, you know?
Two large projects, yeah. I think they are a bit like stick together. It was good actually to do it at the same time, and we were walking towards the same goal and in the same speed, and we learned from the different projects as well. And as I said, I mean, throughout the different companies that we bought, we also had different systems, so we needed to look at the tech stack and see what we were going to move forward on. And also when we started to look specifically on the CVM systems, we saw that we were using legacy systems, and the systems that we were using were not developing in the speed that we needed them to be. So it was an old stack that needed to be upgraded as well. So we jumped onto that project as well. And maybe I should say we have a tagline in Norway for Telia, which is the Norway's biggest challenger. So I guess we're not afraid of jumping on different challenges.
I see that really not, you know, running two such huge projects at the same time. It's a bit crazy, but kind of when you spin it through the perspective that you are mentioning, Sana, it starts making sense. You know, it's like it seems that you were in a super good position when you can build latest greatest tools. You know,
yeah,
seems like you are a lucky one. You know,
yeah, I think we were lucky on that part.
When you were choosing, let's say, your marketing technology stack, what were your key criteria, you know, to choose the stack on which to build? How, what was your thought process there?
We wanted a system that were quite flexible, and that were up to sort of the challenge that we saw, systems that could help us to automate in a good way, and also systems that were up to date of what's happening. And I mean, just look at the last year, it's happened so much around AI, and there are things coming up all the time. So if you are on the legacy stack and you are not in a system that also develops, you will fall behind. So it was important for us to be in a system that is flexible, automating in a good way, and also follow the development that's happening now in the digital world as well. So that's some of the things we were looking at when we looked at the new systems.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. When did you start the transformation? How many years ago?
We started, now I think it's around 2.5-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been passing some years.
Are you happy with the choice? You know, all those years fast?
Well, I think obviously it's pros and cons with all the different systems and the decisions that you make. And there are lots of different good players as well. And there are some systems that are quite alike in the market as well. But we have ended up with a system that we are happy with. But I think also that looking back at it, we did the implementation and the migration from the old system in a quite high speed. We had done the complete migration and we're fully working in the new systems within a year.
Okay.
So that was a quite high speed that we had. Also made us make some decisions along the way. We said, for example, that we just migrate the journeys as they are, so we get them over to the new systems. I think if you say that you have a longer period, you could also look at the journeys that you are migrating over to the new system with a new perspective, because the new systems give you other possibilities. So there are pros and cons in different ways of how you decide to do it. And I think you need to be aware of the decisions that you make. So we did it in 1 year. We are still working on, for example, getting to know all the features that the new system have and keep track of every new releases that they have. It takes time to build just the start knowledge within the systems. And also we are looking at, now we are starting to be done with that, but when we had migrated all the systems, we also started to look at, should we add these journeys into other omni-channel communications that we didn't have before? Are there any other terms that we should take on the journeys that we have, since we have the new tool and new possibilities? So I guess you need to be aware of the choices that you make, and then stick to that and work on the way you do it. So that's how we did it.
Mm-hmm. 1 year migrating all the journeys seems like crazy fast. How many journeys did you migrate just to imagine the scope?
Yeah, we had journeys from both the mobile side and the TV and broadband side. And obviously, I said that we didn't do any upgrades, but in some cases we did. Because if you... we were migrating a welcome journey, for example, and you were both the TV and broadband and mobile customer, then obviously we needed to look at it in a new way. So there were some journeys that we sort of merged and looked at in a little different way. And it's also, I usually say that looking at the amount of journeys could be a bit of a challenge, and it could be different in how you look at it and how you split the different journeys. So it's hard just to say one journey is one journey, but we migrated around 50 journeys in the migration. And then we were merging some and we were splitting some. So yeah, but that's okay. Where we were around.
Okay. Still, it is very impressive. Completing such a project in a year, it's an amazing work. And Sana, I will ask you to do some strange reflection, you know. for example, when company aims to purchase a new tool, a new marketing automation tool, and I'm saying, okay, we are replacing a legacy system, we are going to this new shiny tool and the expectations are high, etc. And then when you start working, you know, the reality kicks in and you kind of start understanding the true reality. Could you do a brief reflection on your case, you know, when you were choosing a new tool, having expectations for that tool, and now when you are working with that tool, how well do these expectations match? And it's not kind of talking about, let's say, a specific tool that it is good or bad, but just your as organization's expectations, how do they adopt over time?
Yeah, I think, as I said, we were working in sort of legacy systems before, and going over to the new tools gave us quite a lot of new features. And it's a much more complex tool, but it also gives you much more flexibility. But by doing that as well, it is a totally different way of working for the team, in what they had done and how they are working now. So we have had to make quite a lot of decisions, because they're, it's not just one correct way of using the system. So we have had discussions on, okay, what's our way of using these tools? And in the beginning, we started to have like everyone had their own way within their system. And then we have figured out that we need to have some kind of common way that we are using the tool, especially if you are... maybe you're on vacation and someone else is going to look at your journey, then we need to have this common way of looking at it. So I think that a tool that gives you more flexibility and possibilities also made us realize that we needed to also figure out what was the right way for us to do it and have some sort of rules and structures on how we were using it. So that's one thing that we have started to do and figured out along the way. I also think one really important thing when you are changing system, and no matter what you are working with, it's important with documentation and document what you are doing, why you are doing it, what's the purpose of it, how does it work. So we have started to get quite good at documentation and document what we are doing. And especially when you are in a system that are a bit more complex, I think it's even more important to do that. And then, as I mentioned before, I think also that this system gives us so many possibilities and we haven't started to look at all the possibilities yet. And I think that will take some time until we are really fully using all the different things that the system has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And imagine if you would change your work, you know, to the organization which will go through the similar journey as you did, replacing the data kind of structures, replacing legacy systems to new campaign management. What would be your three top advices where to start, you know, and what to do to make a project success?
I think maybe my first tip would be to talk to other companies that are using the different tools that you are thinking of starting to use. and ask them about pros and cons, because all the systems have pros and cons. So you really know what you are getting into when you are starting with that. And then, as I said earlier, we decided to do the migration in high speed. I think also when you are taking that decision, you also need to know that there are pros and cons with the different methods that you choose as well. And I think you and the whole organization need to know about that before you start it. So I think that's important as well. And then I think maybe my top advice would be to be prepared to make mistakes, because you haven't done this before. And there will be mistakes along the way. And we have done plenty of mistakes, and I have done plenty of mistakes as well along the way. But I think also looking back at it now, I would say that we have had a quite open culture for mistakes. And I think that's really important that you have a culture that embraces mistakes as well. And if you look at the mistake, you need to figure out, okay, why did it happen? What should we do differently next time? How can we avoid it? So also, if you look at the mistakes that we have made, we have also learned so much. Probably that's the way where we have learned the most. And that has taken us quite a long step forward as well. So yeah, maybe that's my talk to people that have done it before. Know what you are choosing when you are sort of deciding how you are going to implement these tools, and also have an open and good culture around mistakes.
I think these are invaluable advices. So Sanna, we talked about the technical part, you know, kind of we said, okay, we did the transformation from the technical perspective, but now moving to the business part, you know, the objective was to do personalized campaigns or personalized communication, personalized journey management. Could you elaborate a bit more on how do you structure your customer value management initiatives, and which of those initiatives did you could say we improved the level of personalization there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we would like to be as personalized as possible, but there will always be other type of customer communication as well that you need to sort of look in the same mix. And I try to structure it a bit around four areas together with my team. We say that we have ad hoc send-outs, which is something that, you know, you haven't really planned, but you just need to do. So that's ad hoc send-outs or communication. Then we also say that we have like campaign communication and go-to-market, which is more one-time communication. It could be, for our case, it could be launch of a new phone, for example, or a new TV channel that should be incorporated in our to our TV customers. And those are things that happens like once, but they are planned happening. Mm. And then we have what we say always on journeys. And always on journeys is the area where we have focused most in the last few years. And I also think that's the area where you will be able to personalize the most. Because if we look at always on journeys, I can give you an example, which is a quite easy example. But let's say it's a birthday journey when you're having a birthday. It's a journey that is always active in your system, because there are always a customer having a birthday today. But you as a customer, you only receive that communication once. So that's sort of my definition on always on journeys. So it's a journey that is always active. And since it's always active, we are putting a little bit more effort into data models and looking at what kind of data points should we use for this journey. And looking quite at a lot of data and building these data models makes us quite sharp that, you know, this communication should go to this customer or it shouldn't go to that customer. And you also need to be prepared of saying that the communication isn't relevant to everyone. So it's just as important to exclude customers as include customers, if it's relevant or not. So in the always on journeys, we are really relevant. We are using more data points than we are on the launch, for example. So that's the area where we have been trying to build the stack a bit more. And also journeys that are always on will obviously give you more accumulated results over time than just one-time activity. And then I'm having a fourth one, which I call preferred segments. And preferred segments is a place where we are doing some segmentation and we know the customers quite well, but we still group them and we have the data set and the automation already ready. And we are adding communication that is, it could be actualities, things that happen. For example, if you look at when it comes up to Christmas, a lot of people are getting SMS frauds saying that you should pick up a package maybe that you haven't ordered. So we could warn people about this or give them tips on how to handle them, because that's an actuality that concerns quite a lot. But we still could work with the communication in a bit smarter way since we have segmented them before. So we know maybe how we should use the tone of voice to them and such. But that's a quicker time to market than an always-on journey, for example. So that's how we structure the customer communication.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that when you have multiple always-on journeys and campaigns happening and, you know, those segmented communications, somehow you need to prioritize, you know, because at any given point of time, probably multiple communications could be sent to the customer. How do you kind of decide upon the priorities and how do you manage those?
Yeah, I think that's also where you need to make some decision of what's important to you and sort of build your model of what should be prioritized to the specific customer. From our point of view, we are looking both at customer lifetime value and loyalty scores and other points as well and KPIs. And out of that, there is sort of a score and the decision saying that you should have this communication or you shouldn't have this communication. Mm-hmm. And having a rank. And then when you are looking at that, also like quarantine rules are quite important. How long should you be in quarantine before you get some other communication and such? But I think that's also, you need also to look at that of your perspective, what's important for you, and then set these different rules and also try to get them to be automated. Because since you are adding more and more journeys and specifically personalized communication, there will be more options that could hit one customer. So you need to have these quite clear on your side what should be prioritized and what shouldn't.
And if you would think from the business perspective now, let's say from the telco itself, if you could run only five journeys, you know, you have a great tool, limitation, five journeys. Which of them would you choose, you know, to make the business biggest business impact?
Oh, that's really, really, a really tough question. What 5 journeys should I... Oh, yeah, that's hard. Because once again, I guess it's up to what's important for that specific company to achieve. But I, from my point of view, I think it's always good to have some kind of mix, both with like sale communication, brand communication, loyalty communication. So at least the customer is getting some kind of mix. I think they will probably, the relevance will probably go down if you only are trying to push sales, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So a good mix in different areas.
A very polite answer, you know. So, Sana, we talked about technology transformation. We talked about personalization. What is your next big dream in the CVM area, you know? What are you thinking for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I have a few. You know, it's always good to try to push the limit and be a challenger and look forward on this. But if I look at the CVM area, and as I started with a bit, I think it's all about how you actually communicate with your customers and how you work on that side. And CVM is not longer only like the traditional channels that you usually put into the CVM area, like emails and SMSs. It's also app and my pages and maybe the website and what you answer in customer care and in shops and wherever you meet your customer. That's what gives the impression of you and your company to the customer. And it's one-to-one communication as well. So we definitely need to look at this in an omni-channel perspective. And we have started on that journey and come quite far also when we work with customer communication. It's not only email and SMSs anymore. We are working with this in an omni-channel perspective, always looking at the different channels. So I think that's something that we need to do even more in the years to come. And after that, I think also I have been driving before some digital departments with digital marketing. And looking at how digital departments are working, they are really focused on results and A-B testing and optimization. And I think that will be even bigger area within the CVM area as well. I think a lot of people have come quite far on that, and I mean you are looking at results, but I think it will be a bit new way of working, maybe, that all the time looking at A-B testing, control groups, how to optimize different things. And within CVM there are so much things that you can optimize around. It's the subject text, it's the content, it's the segmentation. It's quite a lot of different things that you could look at when you look at A-B testing, which is an interesting area, I think, from that side. But maybe would say what's, at least from my point of view, if you look at sort of where CVM is going, I think what's most important is the CVM team and the colleagues that are working on this. Because you see, it's been an area which have developed a lot the last years. And you need to have a team that are willing to learn. They are willing to look at things in a new way. They are curious and would like to know things. And so I think to have a team that is driving this with you is probably what's most important. So, and I think definitely I'm lucky because I'm having that kind of team. They have been with me along the way, and We have been fighting and we have been happy and we have celebrated and we have drawn our hair and, you know, been frustrated. But it's always been this drive of learning new things and be curious and how should we do this better and what are the new things coming up. So I think that's really, yeah, the people is probably the one that's most important in the future as well as now.
So it's a very good place to start wrapping up our discussion. And we always try to close the discussion with three questions. So the question number one is, what was your proudest moment in your career that you could share with us?
It's quite a lot. You know, I'm starting to get older and older, so it starts to add up. But if I look at maybe the last years, I think we are really proud that we did the migration and adding the new tools in such a short time period. I think that was really impressive by the whole team to be able to do that and succeed with that.
Mm. And during those years, you probably had some failures, you know, that you could laugh now at. Could you share some of those as well?
Yeah, we have had some failures along the way, definitely. We have had so many failures that we actually now, in every check-in that we start Monday morning with, we even have a specific slide in that check-in saying, what did we do last week that we need to learn something on, and how can we do it better? So I think that's really important that you have this good sort of culture around it. But what we have done, if I should be a bit more specific on some mistakes, I guess when we first started to try to activate our first journey, it went a bit in a loop. So before we realized it, one customer had received quite a lot of SMSs from us. But it ended up well. The customer is still happy. So, you know, you always have some mistakes coming up.
How did you bribe the customer to stay with you, you know?
Yeah, no, I think he saw that, you know, we are only people as well.
and the last question is, what learning resource would you recommend for people who work in your areas? Like, how do you get inspired?
Yeah, I think it's important to be curious, as I said before, try to follow what's happening, and obviously I'm following some Norwegian stakeholders within this area. One tip, maybe that's a bit more international, is that I follow this newsletter from really good emails to get inspired on how to communicate. But maybe my best advice, and something that I always say to my team as well, is that try to go on like breakfast seminars. There are always good presenters, and you get to meet people within our area and sort of discuss with them. And if you get at least three good points from that breakfast seminar, it's always worth it.
Thank you. I think this is a really great advice and a good place to close our conversation. So thank you, Sana, for sharing your know-how and inspiring stories and making us feel that, you know, even biggest projects can be done easily.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's been a really, really nice talk. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to CVM Stories. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. You can also ask us a question about a particular customer value management challenge you have at work. We will happily ask our experts to tackle your challenge in a future episode.